The seventh trip, or Netzach. The snafu principle.
The most thoroughly and relentlessly damned, banned, excluded, condemned, forbidden, ostracized, ignored, suppressed, repressed, robbed, brutalized, and defamed of all damned things is the individual human being. The social engineers, statisticians, psychologists, sociologists, market researchers, landlords, bureaucrats, captains of industry, bankers, governors, commissars, kings, and presidents are perpetually forcing this damned thing into carefully prepared blueprints and perpetually irritated that the damned thing will not fit into the slot assigned to it. The theologians call it a sinner and try to reform it. The governor calls it a criminal and tries to punish it. The psychotherapist calls it a neurotic and tries to cure it. Still, the damned thing will not fit into their slots. Never Whistle While You're Pissing by Hagbard Chalene, HMSH.
The midget, whose name was Markoff Chaney, was no relative of the famous Chaneys of Hollywood, but people did keep making jokes about that. It was bad enough to be, by the standards of the gigantic and stupid majority, a freak. How much worse to be so named as to remind these big oversized clods of the cinema's two most famous portrayers of monstro freaks. By the time the midget was 15, he had built up a detestation for ordinary mankind that dwarfed, he hated that word, the relative misanthropies of Paul of Tarsus, Clement of Alexandria, Swift of Dublin, and even Robert Putney Drake. Revenge, for sure, he would have. He would have revenge. It was in college, Antioch, Yellow Springs, 1962, that Markoff Chaney discovered another hidden joke in his name. And the circumstances were, considering that he was to become the worst headache the Illuminati ever encountered, appropriately synchronistic. It was in a math class, and since this was Antioch, the two students directly behind the midget were ignoring the professor and discussing their own intellectual interests. Since this was Antioch, they were a good 6 years ahead of intellectual fads elsewhere. They were discussing ethology.
"So we keep the same instincts as our primate ancestors,"
one student, he was from Chicago, his name was Moon, and he was crazy even for Antioch, was saying.
"But we superimpose culture and law on top of this, so we get split in two, dig? You might say..."
Moon's voice betrayed pride in the aphorism he was about to unleash.
"Mankind is a statutory ape."
"And?"
the professor, old Fred Fidgets Digits, said just at that moment.
"When such a related series appears in a random process, we have what is known as a Markov chain. I hope Mr. Chaney won't be tormented by jokes about this for the rest of the term, even if the related series of his appearances in class do seem part of a notably random process."
The class roared. Another ton of bile was entered in the midget's shit ledger, the list of people who were going to eat turd before he died. In fact, his cuts were numerous, both in math and in other classes. There were times when he could not bear to be with the giants, but hid in his room, Playboy gatefold open, masturbating and dreaming of millions and millions of nubile young women built like playmates. Today, however, Playboy would avail him not. He needed something raunchier. Ignoring his next class, physical anthropology, always good for a few humiliating moments, he hurried across David Street, passing Atlanta Hope without noticing her, and slammed into his room, chain-bolting the door behind him. Damn old Fidget's Digits, and damn the science of mathematics itself, the line, the square, the average, the whole measurable world that pronounced him a bizarre random factor. Once and for all, beyond fantasy, in the depth of his soul, he declared war on the statutory ape, on law and order, on predictability, on negative entropy. He would be a random factor in every equation. From this day forward, unto death, it would be civil war. The midget versus the digits. He took out the pornographic tarot deck, which he used when he wanted a really far-out fantasy for his orgasm, and shuffled it thoroughly. "Let's have a Markoff chain masturbation to start with," he thought with an evil grin. And thus, without ever contacting the Legion of Dynamic Discord, the Arisian Liberation Front, or even the Justified Ancients of Mumu, Markoff Chaney began his own crusade against the Illuminati, not even knowing they existed. His first overt act, his Fort Sumter, as it were, began in Dayton the following Saturday. He was in Norton's Emporium, a glorified five-and-dime store, when he saw the sign. No salesperson may leave the floor without the authorization of a superior, the management.
What?
He thought.
Are the poor little girls supposed to pee in their panties if they can't find a superior?
Years of school came back to him.
Please, may I leave the room, sir?
And rituals which had appeared nonsensical suddenly made sense in a sinister way. Mathematics, of course. They were trying to reduce us all to predictable units, robots. Not for nothing had he spent a semester in Professor Sheets Kelly's intensive course on textual analysis of modern poetry. The following Wednesday, the midget was back at Norton's and hiding in a coffee urn when the staff left and locked up. A few moments later, the sign was down and a subtly different one was in its place. No salesperson may leave the floor or go to the door without the authorization of a superior, the management. He came back several times in the next few weeks, and the sign remained. It was as he suspected. In a rigid hierarchy, nobody questions orders that seem to come from above, and those at the very top are so isolated from the actual work situation that they never see what is going on below. It was the chains of communication, not the means of production, that determined a social process. Marx had been wrong, lacking cybernetics to enlighten him. Marx was like the engineers of his time, who thought of electricity in terms of work done, before Marconi thought of it in terms of information transmitted. Nothing signed, the management, would ever be challenged. The midget could always pass himself off as the management. At the same time, he noticed that the workers were more irritable. The shoppers picked this up and became grouchier themselves. Sales, he guessed correctly, were falling off. Poetry was the answer. Poetry in reverse. His interpolated phrase, with its awkward internal rhyme and its pointlessness, bothered everybody, but in a subliminal, preconscious fashion. Let the market researchers and statisticians try to figure this one out with their computers and averages. His father had been a stockholder in Blue Sky Inc., generally regarded as the worst turkey on the big board. It produced devices to be used in making landings on low-gravity planets. Profits had soared when John Fitzgerald Kennedy had announced that the U.S. would put a man on the moon before 1970. The midget now had a guaranteed annuity amounting to $3,600 per year, $300 per month. It was enough for his purposes. Revenge in good measure he would have. He would have revenge. Living in a Spartan fashion, dining often on a tin of sardines and a pint of milk from a machine, traveling always by Greyhound bus, the midget crisscrossed the country constantly, placing his improved surrealist signs wherever the opportunity presented itself. A slowly mounting wave of anarchy followed in his wake. The Illuminati never got a fix on him. He had little ego to discover, burning all his energies into drive, like a dictator or a great painter. But unlike a dictator or a great painter, he had no desire for recognition. For years, the Illuminati attributed his efforts to the Discordians, the Jams, or the Esoteric Elf. Watts went up, and Detroit, Birmingham, Buffalo, Newark, a flaming picnic blanket spread across urban America as the midget signs burned in the stores that had flaunted them. 100,000 marched to the Pentagon, and some of them tried to expel the demon. The Illuminati foiled that at the last minute, forbidding them to form a circle. A Democratic convention was held behind barbed wire. In 1970, a Senate committee announced that there had been 3,000 bombings in the year, or an average of 10 per day. By 1973, Mora Turi groups were forming in every college, every suburb. The SLA came and came back again. Atlanta Hope was soon unable to control God's lightning, which was going in for its own variety of terrorism years before Illuminati planning had intended.
"There's a random factor somewhere,"
technicians said at Illuminati International.
"There's a random factor somewhere,"
Hagbard Chalene said, reading the data that came out of fuck-up.
"There's a random factor somewhere,"
the Dalai Lama, leader of Elf, said dreamily in his underground hideout beneath Dealey Plaza. Drivers on treacherous mountain roads swore in confusion at signs that said, "Slippery when wet. Maintain 50 miles per hour. Falling rock zone. Do not litter." Men paid high initiation fees to revel in the elegance of all WASP clubs, whose waiters were carefully trained to be almost as snobbish as the members, then felt vaguely let down by signs warning them, "Watch your hat and coat. Not responsible for lost property. The management." The midget became an electronic wizard in his spare time. All over the country, pedestrians stood undecided on curbs as electric signs said walk while the light was red and then switched to don't walk when the light went green. He branched out and expanded his activities. Office workers received memos early in the morning after he had spent a night with a Xerox machine and puzzled over 1. All vacation requests must be submitted in triplicate to the personnel department at least 3 weeks before the planned vacation dates. 2. All employees who change their vacation plans must notify personnel department by completing Form 1472, Vacation Plan Change, and submitting it 3 weeks before the change in plans. 3. All vacation plans must be approved by the department supervisor and may be changed if they conflict with the vacation plans of employees of higher rank and/or longer tenure. 4. Department supervisors may announce such cancellations at any time, provided the employee is given 48 hours notice or 2 working days, whichever is longer, as the case may be. Employees crossing the international dateline, see Form 2317. 5. Employees may not discuss vacation plans with other employees or trade preferred dates. 6. These few simple rules should prevent a great deal of needless friction and frustration if all employees cooperate, and we will all have a happy summer. The management. On April 26th of the year when the Illuminati tried to immunitize the Eschaton, the midget experienced aches, pains, nausea, spots before his eyes, numbness in his legs, and dizziness. He went to the hotel doctor, and a short while after describing his symptoms, he was rushed in a closed car to a building that had a Hopi Indian Kachina doll shop in front and the Las Vegas CIA office in the back. He was fairly delirious by then, but he heard somebody say, "Huh, we're ahead of the FBI and the cesspool cleaners on this one." Then he got an injection and began to feel better, until a friendly, silver-haired man sat down by his cot and asked who the girl was.
"What girl?"
the midget asked irritably.
"Look, son, we know you've been with a girl. She gave you this."
"Was it the clap?"
the midget asked, dumbfounded. Except for his pornographic tarot cards, he was still a virgin. The giant women were also damn patronizing, but his own female equivalents bored him. The giantesses were the holy grail to him, but he never had the courage to approach one.
I never knew the clap could be this bad,"
he added, blushing. His greatest fear was that somebody would discover his virginity.
"No, it wasn't the clap,"
said the kindly man, who didn't deceive the midget one bit. If this guy couldn't pump him, he knew they would send in the mean, tough one. The nice cop and the nasty cop, oldest con in the business.
"This girl had a certain, rare disease, and we're with the U.S. Public Health Service."
The gentleman produced forged credentials to prove this last allegation.
"Horseshit,"
the midget thought.
"Now,"
the sweet old codger went on,
"we've got to track her down and see that she gets the antidote, or a lot of people will get this disease. You understand?"
The midget understood. This guy was Army Intelligence or CIA, and they wanted to crack this before the FBI and get the credit. The disease was started by the government, obviously. Some fuck-up in one of their biological war laboratories, and they had to cover it up before the whole country got wise. He hesitated. None of his projects had ever been consciously intended to lead to death, just to make things a little unpredictable and spooky for the giants.
"The U.S. Public Health Service will be eternally grateful to you,"
the grandfatherly man said, eyes crinkling with sly affection.
"It isn't often that a little man gets a chance to do such a big job for his country."
That did it.
"Well,"
the midget said,
"she was blonde in her mid-20s, I guess, and she told me her name was Sarah. She had a scar on her neck. I suppose somebody tried to cut her throat once. She was, let's see, about 5'5", and maybe 110, 115 pounds. And she was superb at giving head,"
he concluded, thinking that was a very plausible Las Vegas whore he had just created. His mind was racing rapidly. They wouldn't want people running around loose knowing about this. The antidote had been to keep him alive while they pumped him. He needed insurance.
"Oh, and here's a real lead for you,"
he said.
"I just remembered. First, I want to explain something about, people who are below average in stature. We're very sexy. You see, our sex gland, or whatever it's called, works extra, because our growth gland doesn't work, so we never get enough."
He was making this up off the top of his head and enjoying it. He hoped it would spread. He had a beautiful vision of bored, rich women seeking midgets as they now seek blacks.
"So you see,"
he went on,
"I kept her a long time. having encores and encores and encores. Finally, she told me she'd have to raise her price because she had another customer waiting. I couldn't afford it, so I let her go.
Now the clincher.
But she mentioned his name. She said Joe Blotz will be pissed if I disappoint him. Only the name wasn't Joe Blotz.
Well, what is it?
That's the problem,
the midget said sadly.
I can't remember, but if you leave me alone a while...
He added, brightly.
Maybe it'll come back to me.
He was already planning his escape.